Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he is Chris Owen.
I liked how we did that kind of little...
Here's Chris. We are the podcast attempting to reclaim the social narrative, to reclaim it and recast it, to move beyond the binaries of politics and economics, which dominate so much of the conversation in the public square, but which does little to help us arrive at a place which could foster human flourishing, human kindness, the manifestation, the full manifestation of the soul, so to speak.
The lenses of philosophy and theology and psychology and other humanistic disciplines, those lenses help us see more clearly into our shared common life. That is the fundamental beginning point of this project and what we're doing. Shifting the lens, helping people to use a different way of seeing. That metaphor is so strong with me, Shayna. Vision and seeing and lenses and frames. The default frames of politics and economics right now, those lenses, the way we practice them, the way we look through them, are limiting. So that's our project. That's what we're up to.
Somewhere in heaven, my father is smiling because I come from an optical family. The family business was manufacturing eyeglass frames and lenses. My sister married a man who owned another optical company. So we're an optical family. The idea of lenses and frames and so on and so forth is a comfortable common, but also I think, dare I say, visionary. It moves us, you know. And you ask someone to say, okay, just switch lenses for a moment, so we can get a different view on this. Which would be a great segue to today's show, but we're going to pause for a moment and give the spinny wheel a go.
Indeed, we have a spinny wheel. It has 16 different core values and key ideas. And we give it a spin, whatever it lands on. Shayna and I do a riff on that core value or key idea. Shayna thinks that this is a warm-up exercise, and it is, because Shayna is right about that. And I think it's anti-totalitarian practice, because totalitarians don't like randomness or playfulness. And so that's what I think it is. And so Shayna's going to give this puppy a spin. The spinny wheel has landed on shine light. And this is one of our, it's a piece of our tagline, be curious, go deep, and shine light or shed light. And I think of this, I think, a little bit differently than you do, which is fun because we can think differently and help each other see different things. Ah, there's that vision metaphor again.
Right, there you go. There you go.
To me, shine light is about, I've always thought of it as, that our project is certainly about thinking and feeling, and it's also about doing. And to me, shining light is, after the show's over, going into the world and shining light, being a means of helping people see and act differently. So shining light is a way to be in the world. Is how I think of it. I think you think differently.
I like that. I have no rub with that. I think about what we're doing here, shining light or taking blinders off, right? We talk about getting beyond the binary. So think about the binaries of politics and economics as blinders, which keep us from seeing what's at the periphery and just plodding forward, right? And the old saying, if we keep doing what we've always done, we're going to continue to get what we've already gotten. We know that. We know that repeating the same behavior and over again, expecting a different outcome, is the definition of insanity. We know all that. So shining light or taking the blinders off is about asking one another to stay open to or to look into a place which was previously not illuminated. It's easier to act from a place of spiritual and moral and ethical grounding than it is to act out of a place of just moral outrage. You know, like to have the substance there is to be able to see a fuller picture. And that's what I think enables us to respond rather than react. Things are not either or. We're getting beyond the binaries. But yeah, there's definitely a component in which the show is the show, but the purpose of the show isn't just to have a show. The purpose of the show is to actually change the conversation out in the world. So, my friends, if you're listening today, there's your homework.
Today's show is going to be released as a two-pack with our conversation with Joel Eaton. So the recommendation is to listen to the conversation with Joel first, and today we will follow up on that conversation and lift up some of the pieces of our conversation with Joel that we find important and worthy of emphasis. So,
I loved the interview, Chris. I have to say, I enjoyed Joel's, the way the whole interview rolled out was like you couldn't have set this up better. As somebody who is a partner in this work, somebody who is organically, well, it wasn't always organically curious, but who had the courage to look beyond his own convictions, to see another way. And I think one of the things that I was really impressed by, and I don't think I had realized it quite as clearly, but when we open, you know, we ask our listeners to open themselves to new perspectives. There is a cost and a joy to that level of discipleship, right? To stay open to the truth. Because like in Joel's story, when he encounters a broader truth, it literally takes him out of the realm that he had been born and raised in. And there's loss involved in that. Yeah, he gains a lot, but I think it's important to honor that the transformational, there is a cost and a joy to the transformational process.
Yeah. Yep. So just as a little bit of context, Joel Eaton is the interfaith chaplain at Havenwood Heritage Heights, which is a continuing care community here in New Hampshire. And to respond to what you just said, so he shares his biography as part of our conversation, and he describes so poignantly, interestingly, a moment in his life where there's a big shift that occurs. Let me just simplify it by saying a big shift. And it's interesting that you pick up on that, Shana, because, okay, here's what it reminds me about our shared common life, an observation that I share with you and with our listening community, which is I heard someone comment recently, and I can't remember when or where, but it was a conversation about our shared common life in the United States. So it was some seminar I was attending, and the speaker said something like this, that we do not live in an era of change, but we're living in a change of era. And my connection to Joel's story and what you just said is that kind of moment where there is a profound shift, like a profound change of understanding about what life is or what grounds
plate
us,
shifting.
Tectonic plate shifting, that kind of a moment is captured to me by this play of words, and not an era of change, but a change of era. It's and in Joel's biography, this moment of basically a spiritual crisis as he wrestles with the inheritance of the faith that he received in his family, and then how his life takes him to a point where he needs to question that and expand on that. And it's a moment of disorientation. That's where I'm going to land on this. Is,
yes.
And that's alive in individual lives and individual stories, and it's alive in our culture right
yes,
now.
Yes, that is the word, Chris. That is the word, a moment of disorientation. And as you were talking, I was thinking, right, in so many ways, Joel's story is the micro disorientation that reflects the macro disorientation that we're all living in. it's affecting all of us differently, but many of us have felt on some level that disorientation and the forced leaving of something that was known and perhaps comfortable, perhaps not, but known, you know, familiar. However, Joel navigates it. The thing that I want to say about Joel's journey is that as a person of faith, he navigates it so faithfully, so beautifully and peacefully. You know, the challenge for us in our culture today is we have so many people who are hitting that moment of disorientation and panicking and getting angry and getting violent and getting greedy. And I want to say that, you know, I see the essence of the Christian faith in Joel's journey, that the willingness to enter the tomb, the faithfulness to allow it to be closed, even though, let's face it, the tomb is dark. After a while, it probably really stinks in there. It's not a comfortable place to be. But people with deep faith have faith that the tomb is no place to spend a life, that the stone will eventually be rolled away. And it allows us to go into that period of destabilization, I think, without completely freaking out and melting down, or having moments of freak out and meltdown, but not allowing the freak out and meltdown to be, you know, the overriding theme as you come out of it. So, yeah, I really heard in Joel a partner in this work that we're doing. And much of that, you know, I know we started with Shine Light, which is, right, one of our core principles here on what in God's name. But, you know, the other one is to stay curious, right, and to go deep, which he did. He stayed curious, and then he went deep into it. And deep is not always comfortable. Deep can be scary. Deep is, by definition, over your head, right?
So I commend, again, if you haven't listened to Joel telling his story, go listen, because you've just characterized it in a really insightful way, Shana, which is the way you connect his story, his biography, the way he tells it with faithfulness. I resonate with that. But I want to explore this a little bit with you, this sense of disorientation as it pertains to the wider culture. And I want to say, if this kind of disorientation is really driving a lot of the
chaos,
what's the word you say? This is not a word that is culturally familiar to me, but you say mishigas.
Mishigas, yes. Mishigas, a Yiddish word meaning unnecessary bullshit that makes everyone crazy.
Okay, that's perfect. So that to me is why, I'm unsettled with this, and this is why I need your help to think about these things, and other people as well to think about these things. But this disorientation, if this is a core, like if this gets really to the heart of the mishigas in our culture and in our shared common life, that's why I question the overemphasis on politics, the way we practice it. People look to politics as though that's where we're going to find the answers. And this kind of disorientation, like if that's the spirit of the time that we live in, that's asking too much of our politics. The danger is, so I have to say this immediately, which is, it's not to say that politics is not important. We don't want to say that. I don't want to say that. But I feel, and it really drives the work that I see this project doing, which is to say there are spiritual, theological, psychological, humanistic dynamics that are pre-political. And I do get into that. I say that to Joel, you know, in that conversation, and we do explore that. But the disorientation that that we landed on here to open our dialogue today, to me, that leads to my reflection on really what we're doing in this project. Let me shift to the second half of the conversation with Joel, where moving from his biography to systems and mental health and sick society and that kind of thing. Let me just toss this out to you, see if it grabs your attention. But one of the things that I thought Joel pointed out very interesting to me with connection to anxiety and depression in our culture. And he said that one of the ways that recognizing the system as being a cause of anxiety and depression in individuals, one of the benefits of that recognition is that it's a way for individuals to externalize their anxiety and depression. And what I understood by externalize was not feel so alone, like not feel isolated and responsible for and therefore ashamed of feeling anxious and depressed. And I think I knew that somewhere, but it's always helpful to hear somebody articulate that.
That was the idea I was trying to get back to.
Seriously.
That I couldn't remember.
Right.
Yeah. Because I found that whole thing, there's a both and, it's a double-edged sword. Because as you and I talked about way back when, the fascist playbook only has, I mean, every fascist has their own style. And some have argued that there is no fascist playbook. There is only one rule to the beginning of fascism, and that is to create an us versus them. And it seems to me that the current political system has divided the American people, who really, at the end of the day, should be united about the things that we want. We want freedom. We want access to things like education and healthcare. We want to be able to afford a roof over our house. We want to be able to afford to put food on our table. And we'd like a little time to just stop once in a while and breathe, okay? I think most people could agree on those fundamental things. So, you know, the fascists come in and say, well, the reason that's not happening, don't look at us. We didn't cause this by getting into bed with the corporatists. It's not, you know, we haven't taken capitalism to the extreme at our own benefit and at your sacrifice. Sorry about that. You know, they don't, in order to get people to look away from that, they divide us. They divide the people and get the people fighting, because if we stop fighting for long enough, we're going to look at each other and say, we have more in common. We are more alike, in the words of Maya Angelou, we are more alike than we are unalike. And the moment we figure that out, of corporate exploitation, of laissez-faire economics, now is suddenly under threat. And I believe that the body politic in America today lives to support that system, period, end of conversation. And God forbid the people down here on the ground who are struggling to get by day to day figure it out. Because once we, you know, turn our swords into plowshares and start working together, all those people who have those great jobs in Congress, those six-figure salaries, wonderful health care plans, who get this stuff for life, right? All of their benefits go bye-bye.
And this is where Joel, again, remembering that conversation and looking at my notes about it, I think he offered a really interesting response. Interesting and provocative and prescriptive. Yeah,
prescriptive. Curative. Like therapeutic.
Yes,
really.
Which was this. Yeah. You know, if we think of these big systemic problems, it can feel like overwhelming and beyond our control. And it's true. And yet he says there's a way, he liked the word resistance. And there are ways then that we can resist the kind of power dynamics that you've just outlined. And his sense of that is community, is refinding community, which is a theme that you and I have come back to all kinds of ways, reclaiming community. And so there's, and then I'll just finish with this, remembering what he said. You know, he identified community as, yes, we resonate with one another, we find connection with one another in the suffering, in the pain that these divisions and power structures create. And he said, there's also finding commonality in resistance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's fuel, commonality and the resistance. And in case anybody wonders how powerful it is, let's go back to a story you and I are both familiar with, and that is the Christian story. where the central character in the story is executed by the politicians of the day. And in their resistance to that narrative, a little band of misfits, of outcasts, of people who did not have the power, rose up and created something that has extended 2,000 plus years, you know, 2,025 years or so into modern day. That Christianity, as screwed up as a lot of it is, still exists today because they resisted the narrative. But more to Joel's immediate story, he's talking about the community at the retirement center and how, you know, the impact of the George Floyd murder and COVID and how they all got together and then they started doing reading. They were in this study group, and then what happened was beautiful. They woke up and they looked across the street and they said, oh my God, right there across the street is a whole community of immigrants. We can make a difference there. We can be welcoming. We can bring what we had. This is, you know, this is a bunch of older folks who are now in a retirement community, right? Talk about, in the context of American culture, the least of these, because we do not respect our elders. We do not draw on their wisdom. But damn it all, if they didn't rise up and say, no, we have something to offer right here, and we're going to offer it to the people across the street. And now there is this new community that is a joint venture between these retired folks who probably have a lot of skills to offer and who are being fed by, right, in return, are being fed by and culturally nurtured by this diversity of human life and perspective and orientation. My God, if that is not a slice of the kingdom of heaven, then I don't know what is. I just thought that was the most beautiful. That was the point where I was like, oh my God, that's our show. Like, that's what this project looks like live. People who stayed curious, went deep, and then went out and shined the light.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, thanks for that, Shana. That was a perfect recap of where Joel ended. And man, you know, the big systemic ways that our society is not working properly. That's kind of how Joel started, how he and I started this second half of conversation. I mean, it's just, that just needs to be recognized. It's not, and that might, the way I look at history and human nature is that doesn't make us special. Like, in all times and all places, our shared common life is not working the way that God intended it to do, to put it in theological language that makes sense to me. You know, the story you just ended that Joel shared is the shining light, the doing, and a hard look not just at ourselves, but at the system in which we are caught or in which we inhabit our lives that can limit us in ways that we're not aware of.
There's an illusion that if we ignore it in some way, shape, or form, it'll go away. But what ends up happening, unbeknownst to us, and this is a psychological twist, is, you know, if we're unwilling to go deep, if we're unwilling to do the confession and let some things go and potentially go through that period of disorientation, we do not come out the other side transformed. We may change, but change can be undone. If I melt the ice, I can refreeze it. Transformation is striking the match head, right? Once the sulfur has ignited, it cannot be reignited. So, you know, we can do change to change to change, or we can seek ultimate transformation. And I think Joel's story is transformation. I think one of the things that I really loved about this colleague who I've never met is that his ministry seems now to have integrated that in a way that he can lead other people through that tomb time into a resurrection. And he did it beautifully at the retirement community. So I hope we have more conversation with him. I hope, I look forward to a chance to meet him sometime in the future.
Yeah, me too. I think we're there.
I think we are.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. We are grateful for your presence with us today. And If you like what you heard today, please support us on Patreon. For as little as a dollar a week, you can support these kinds of conversations and this kind of reflection on our shared common life. You can also sign up for our newsletter at our website, whatingods.com, which is Shana,
WHATINGODS.
Great to be with you today.
Always great to be with you, Chris. And thank you to Joel for such a wonderful interview.